Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We're a couple of minutes before 6 o'clock, but I think most people are here, so we can commence, I believe. So welcome to this meeting of the Burwood Local Planning Panel for the 13th of March 2025, scheduled to open at 6 p.m. The Burwood Council acknowledges the Wangal peoples who are the traditional custodians of the area. We pay our respects to their elders past and present. My name is Kevin Hoffman. I've been appointed as chair of the meeting. Can we turn the volume up, please? I'm getting feedback through the microphone, so I can hear. I'm sorry if you can't. Is that better? Do you need it more? More, please. Okay, I'll keep talking till you can hear me. How's that going? Nods in the back, the back row. Can you hear? No, they can't hear. Can you go higher, please? Yeah, thanks. Now, can you hear me now? If you can't hear in the back row, you might like to come forward. There's still some spare seats, I think. There's a couple of seats with speaker signs on them, but I don't think there's that many speakers. Do you need to relocate or can I continue? There you go. All right, thank you. You can hear now, sir? Excellent. Okay. I'd like to start by introducing the panel members. I've already mentioned that my name's Kev Hoffman. I've been appointed chair. My experience is as an architect and a town planner. I've also been a commissioner of the New South Wales Land Environment Court over a period of 14 years. And since leaving the court, I've been either a chair or an expert on panels similar to this one around the Sydney region. Now, on my left, I've got Tom Morgan. Tom, would you like to introduce yourself?
Yeah, sure. I'm Tom Morgan. I'm the community representative on the panel. I've lived in the Burwood LG. Oh, I'm Tom Morgan. I'm the community representative on the panel, and I've lived in the Burwood area for about 10 years. I work in public affairs and communications and hold an MBA.
Thank you, Tom. On my right, I've got Judy Clark, is one of the ladies.
My name is Judy Clark. I'm a town planner with over 35 years experience. I've worked in local government all over Sydney, multiple councils, in development assessment in senior positions. I'm now a sole trader and I work on a lot of panels in Sydney, and I'm also appointed as a state panellist by the New South Wales government to do regional panel work as well.
Thank you, Judy. And last but not least, Claire Brown.
Thank you, Kevin. Claire Brown, I'm a consultant town planner. Like Judy, I've worked in local government in development assessment and strategic planning. I have worked in Sydney and in the regional areas, and I'm also appointed to local planning panels and regional planning panels as well. And I practice for a number of years as a lawyer.
Thank you all. Now, you'll notice that we've got a public address system and it's all being recorded. Members of the public are advised that meetings of the panel are audio recorded for the purpose of assisting with the preparation of minutes and the recording of the public part of the meeting, and it will be published on the council's website. Yes, I'm sorry, sir, you've got your hand up. Perhaps you could come forward. Officers, can we move some chairs closer? Okay. Well, council officers have appeared to do it, appeared to turn it up to the maximum. Would you like to bring your chairs forward to perhaps where you can hear? Well, I see. Officers, can you move the chairs closer in, please? Now, we've got some... What about those chairs over there? Can they move? Okay. Can you hear now the air conditioning's off? No, you can't. Well, we have some spare chairs. We can bring them forward and put them out. We don't need two chairs over there anyway. I'm sorry for this delay, but I think it's important that the people can hear. All right. There is, I can see one spare chair out the front here and two over there. Well, actually, we've got these ones. Okay, how's that? Can you hear now? Excellent. That's all right. I'm just wondering about the rostrum now. It's right in the middle of everything. Officer, when you come back, could you move the rostrum over to there so it's not blocking the view of some of the people? A bit further back. That way. Away. Okay. There. Thank you. That's good. Okay. Now, do I need to repeat any of what I've already said and the panel members' introductions of themselves? You're okay? All right. Well, we'll proceed. I've mentioned that we are recording the proceedings and that the public part of the meeting will be published on the council's website. Now, the way the panel operates is that we've received for well over a week all of the reports and the submissions and the details of the proposal in the paperwork that we have before us, and the panel's been able to read those. Today we've undertaken a site inspection where we walked around Daisy Street, Lily Street, Waratah Street and Violet Street. Okay. We thought that was sufficient to understand the layout of the area. We didn't go on the site because we didn't think we needed to. We saw what we needed to see from the street. Now, the way the panel works is we have 16 people actually registered to attend tonight, but of those, we only have 5 who wish to speak, and that's a Felicity Young, a Boris Santana, an Aaron De La Paz, a Donata Christofouli, and a Paul Boutros. In due course, I'll call upon each one of those, and when I do, would the person come to the rostrum over here, and you'll be invited to speak for 3 minutes. Okay. And that's for the panel to hear additional information to what you've probably put in writing that we've already read, but the panel may want to ask you questions and that will take extra time. So we hope you will indulge us in answering those questions. And once we've done that, we will retire into a private session to discuss the reports and the submissions and what you say to us tonight in order to come to a decision on the proposal tonight. And of course, that decision will be published on the council website too in a few days. Now, I don't know that I have any apologies. If there are any, could they be stated now? Thank you. Can I ask the panel members, have they signed a declaration of no conflict of interest in this proposal?
No conflict.
Yeah, I have signed and no conflict.
Okay.
Yes, signed, no conflict.
Thank you. I also have declared no conflict of interest. Now, we've only got one agenda item this evening. It's item DA3/25. It's number 4.56, modification to DA2019.028, approved place of public worship to increase services at 10 Daisy Street, Croydon Park. The council has had the benefit of an independent town planning expert to prepare the reports on this application. And you'll see over on the side table, Mr. Chris Young, who is that independent consultant. I'll ask him just to summarise the proposal briefly, if you would, Chris.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If everyone can hear me, I trust. I'm a town planning consultant with over 30 years' experience in local government development assessment. And I'd just like to introduce the application. Council has retained my services to undertake an independent assessment of the modification application. It's a modification under section 4.56 of the Environmental Planning Assessment Act, which deals with modifications to applications approved by the Land and Environment Court. The background then is that the application, when it was a development application, was approved in 2019 by the court, and the applicant has now sought modification to that application. In terms of what's being proposed, if people have seen the agenda on page 3, there's a neat summary in terms of what is proposed, and that is two additional worship services per week for a total of 5 services per week, with up to 140 persons attending, an additional component of 3 Bible study sessions, one each on Monday, Thursday and Friday evenings, with up to 20 persons attending. Another component of the modification is to allow choir members, deacons and deaconesses to attend up to 90 minutes prior to the scheduled servicing, the starting time of activities and services, and the current requirement is actually 30 minutes, and to allow special occasions, of which 3 per year, to occur over a 2-week period instead of the current approval for a 1-week period. Those modifications have been spelt out in the report, and I won't go into those too much detail now. By way of consent conditions, there are 4 consent conditions proposed to be modified. They are conditions 2, 3, 5, and 9. And I'll just speak briefly about Council's neighbour notification process. There was a neighbour notification process in accordance with Council's normal standards. That's attracted 29 submissions, which triggers the need to report the application to the local planning panel, which is why we're here tonight. That's nothing further.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Excellent. It's all right, I'm a teacher, so I've got a loud voice. I live in Daisy Street. I live on the same side of the street as the church. I got together with a few of the other residents of Daisy Street when we heard about this proposal, and we have been seeking some support from other residents of not only Daisy Street, but Waratah Street, Violet Street, Lily Street, and even some in Rose Street as well, because I think that most of the residents, the 50 odd people who signed our petition, and I believe you've got a copy of the petition, is that right? There was over 100 people that signed the petition, and they represented 50 rate-paying residences. So I think there is an issue here, and it's the main issue that I feel quite passionate about is parking. Parking has been a big problem in Daisy Street, and it has now gone into those streets surrounding Daisy Street. I believe that there is active avoidance of Daisy Street now for parking, and it's actually crept around into Lily Street and Violet Street in particular. I expect the other residents would agree with that. The church itself, I think, only has 2 official off-street parking sites, but
often you will see more than two cars being parked in those particular bays. And yeah, there has been evidence of traffic being actively diverted into streets outside of the street of the actual church. So that's becoming a problem for a lot of rate-paying residents. There's also concerns that were brought up in the petition about traffic and safety, and the fact that the proposal is for increased traffic at the church, that will mean increased traffic on our streets, which can become a bit of a safety issue as well. And also, just as a resident, those particular times when the church is being used, it's very difficult for you to have your own family and your own visitors to come and, you know, spend time with you in your own residence, because there is such an excess of parking issues. So that makes it tricky. You sort of have to plan when you can actually invite people over to your home, you know, so that it's doable, basically. And I guess my big question is, why are we having such an over-intensification of use of the church? And with events 6 to 7 days a week, if you see other places of worship, they're kind of limited to maybe 2 or 3 days or 2 or 3 events a week. So I'm just curious, and I guess I'd like to find out from the church, people involved in the church, as to why this big ramping up of activity at the church. And given that, you know, our petition represented 50 residences, I know you mentioned it's going to be on the website, but how else will it be communicated to those people that are in those affected streets?
All right. I don't know that the council sends individual letters to
probably not
the
anymore.
People who objected.
Yeah.
But obviously, if you go on the website, you would see what had happened. Now, we usually give 3 minutes per speaker. I'm thinking we might just pause here and see if the panel members have a question of you before we decide whether or not you need to say any more. Did you have much more you wanted to say?
I think I've pretty much covered what I wanted to say. I'm sure that the other speakers will probably reiterate or even add to what I've said. So,
all right, yeah. Thank you. Questions? Ms. Young?
Thank you for that. I'm just interested, it was approved in 2019. Are these comments consistent through that period, or is it more, you know, in the last 2 years, or if is it the same problem right from the get-go?
I think it has been an ongoing problem, but I think now that the submission's in, we're seeing more diversion of the traffic. So, yeah, I think it's been in that sort of time frame of, I guess, planning for the next steps. Yeah.
And when you say diversion of traffic, does that mean there is parking available within Daisy Street but not necessarily the other streets?
Yes. I think there's been an active avoidance of actually parking in Daisy Street. So you see lots of people walking from Lily Street, and you see people walking from Violet Street as well. So, yeah.
We noticed today that when you have parking on both sides of Daisy Street, it's really a one-way street.
It definitely is, yeah.
And that obviously contributes to the congestion issues.
It does. And I was going to say too that, you know, given life these days, lots of adult children are living at home as well, and they've got their vehicles as well. So, you know, that adds another dimension to the whole parking situation as well. So that's, you know, something else to take into consideration, I guess.
All right. Possibly one other issue was some of the allotments in the street seem to be narrow, and obviously the side driveways, when those houses were built, the cars were a lot narrower.
Definitely.
And as a result, the most cars we saw were parked between the front boundary in the house
mm.
because they wouldn't fit down the driveway.
That's the situation in my house, it's in my street. Yeah,
yeah, there's
my,
a couple where house. They seem to be wider,
yeah. Yeah.
But that's a contributing issue.
It is.
All yeah. right. Any other questions from the panel members? Well, thank you, Ms. Young.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Now, the next person I have listed is Donata Cristofulli. Are you present? Ah, thank you. Now, the microphone's on. You might like to bend it down so it's close to your mouth. That's good. Thank you.
Hello. Can you hear me? Can you hear me? Yeah. Okay. My name's Donata Cristofulli. I live in 15 Violet Street, Croydon Park, and I speak against the recommendation of the DA. My objections are...
The recommendation is to refuse.
To refuse, that yes. Application. Yes.
And you're saying you're speaking against that.
Yes. No. What am I...
I just want to make sure. So you're in favour of the recommendation. Is that true?
No.
The recommendation is to refuse.
To refuse, yes. Yeah. My yeah.
So you're in favour of that one?
Yeah. Refusing, yeah, I'm in favour. Sorry. I've never been to a meeting like this. So
that's all right.
I'm getting a bit confused too myself.
You can see we're recording it, so we need to...
I'm a resident of Violet Street, so I don't want extra, you know,
okay.
services.
Keep on going then.
Okay. Mine are all points. So my first point is there'll be increased traffic in the there's increased traffic in our street because as Daisy, they're no longer parking in Daisy Street. It happens every weekend and on special occasions such as Easter and Christmas. So, and two, for a street like Violet Street where I live, backing a car out of a driveway with parking car to car, it's dangerous. I've had an accident driving out of my driveway because I couldn't see because cars parked on either side and it happened. The participants that attend this place of worship do not live locally because they all come from outside the community. They don't have much on-site parking, so they spill out into the neighbouring streets, making it impossible for visitors of the permanent residents finding any parking on the weekend especially and during weekdays when they come and have their services. We already have increased traffic conditions as multiple housing complexes in our area have been built. Must we also bear additional disturbances 7 days a week to our once tranquil environment? Because it was a lovely suburb when I first moved into Croydon Park. It was quiet. There wasn't much thoroughfare, but now we just have constant traffic, constantly, all day, every day. I've had my side mirror on my car broken 4 times, parked in front of my house, and I've had to move it along so as people don't swerve, but it's happened. So what else? And the duration of the people that attend the church don't stay there for an hour. It's, you know, 3 or 4 or 5 hours of duration. You know, I could go out and in late afternoon to go do some shopping, and when I come back I can't park in front of my house, so I've got to park in my driveway, which I shouldn't because it's against the law and I can get fined, so but I do because where do I park at night time, you know, late at night. So, yeah. So I hope you consider the well-being of the residents in Daisy Street especially and the surrounding areas and the residents of the surrounding streets too, especially Violet Street, because Violet Street is being used constantly.
I think we're getting close to the 3 minutes. I'd like to ask a question about you saying sometimes people are staying 3, 4, and 5 hours. Is that on one of these days of...
On a Sunday morning. Mm. They're there from before 9 o'clock sometimes. If I go down to the market, when I come back, there's no parking.
Mm-hmm.
And they're there until lunchtime.
Okay.
And also in the afternoon, at night time, when they have services at night, they can be there 3 or 4 hours.
Mm. But are they the same people there?
Yes, they're the same cars. You can tell they're the same cars, yep.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay.
Questions from other panel members?
I'm sorry.
Are you listed to speak? Well, can you please be seated? We've got other people listed who we'll hear from, and then I'll come back to you. Very good. No questions from the panel. Now, the next person I have listed was Paul Boutros. Mr. Boutros, would you like to come up, please? Now, the microphone's on, I think. You just adjusted up to now.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Okay.
Nice. Good evening, councillors. My name is Paul Boutros. Mm-hmm. I live in Daisy Street. Been a resident there for nearly 30-odd years.
Mm-hmm.
We were involved in the first few years of the church when they first settled in Daisy Street, roughly about 2012. From 2012 to 2018-19, where the church was at its peak of 7 days a week, we were in contact with Bell Council to do something about it, because the original churches, we've had three other churches in the street over that period prior to 2012, were the Plymouth Brethren, the Church of England, and we, for a short time, we had a small Korean church community. None of them were more than 2 days a week. So once this particular house of worship came into Daisy Street, let's say the intensification was through the roof. So through constant emailing and photos being sent to Guild Council showing the problems that were arising because of this community that had just settled into Croydon Park. We went to the Land Environment Court to get some sort of a reduction in the days, which thankfully it happened and got passed through. But unfortunately, we got the 3 day reduced to 3 days. But let's just say they haven't been completely compliant since the court order. And if council or board members need evidence of that, I can provide that for them. The deflection of traffic into other streets, visually I have seen, as well as other residents of Daisy Street and Lily Street, the traffic controllers that are put in place by the church actually go to their parishioners' cars if they park in Daisy Street, tap on the window and gesture for them to go into the outside streets during the church services. Again, if they need visual evidence, I can provide that. Also, all the parking issues have been pushed onto streets that formerly didn't have that issue. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's clear that the intensification that's happened now and what's going to hopefully not happen will only exacerbate the problem that's already happening. I mean, clearly that the site isn't big enough for the activities that they wish to pursue.
Mm-hmm.
Seven days a week. I know there's Bible studies for 20 people and choir for 50 people. But to be honest, those numbers aren't going to be policed as we had it prior to 2018 and 19. It was almost a service every night. And the numbers aren't 140. They vary from much higher. You've got a child service and you've got an adult service on Sundays, approximately 140 per person. And they will exceed those amounts just by the foot traffic alone, and up to 70 to 60 cars parked around all the other residential streets. And now since the submission, or just a little bit before the submission, we started to notice a bit of irregularity because the parking in Daisy Street, I had to take photos and timestamp them from November, because we couldn't believe that there was parking in our street. But then when I take my dog for a walk, I'd bump into other neighbours and they look, why is our street packed? But mm-hmm. we know it's the congregation's parking, because they have the majority of the cars have particular stickers that we can notify their cars of mm-hmm. their emblem. So that's how we know that they are part of that congregation. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm under the impression that the deflection at the moment is to probably redo reports, but we're not going to get a truthful report, because they're not parking in our street, they're parking in other streets. And I've sent council numerous emails suggesting maybe they should just do routine checks to see the days that the church isn't there and the times that they are there. And then you can clearly see that the streets that are quiet throughout the week when there isn't services are almost to capacity. So,
thank you, Mr. Boudros.
No,
I'll just see if the panel members have any questions.
No problem.
Thank you.
Well, I do have a question. In that you're saying the cars have stickers on them so you can identify when they're part of the congregation.
Yeah.
So when we walked around, of course, in Daisy Street, as I've already said, when you've got cars parked by the side of the road, it's a one-way street.
Yeah.
Or one travelling lane street.
Yep.
So clearly it would get congested.
Exactly.
If you've got 140 people arriving, even
approximately 140. Like I said, the numbers aren't really consistent with what we see visually.
Okay.
The numbers, I believe, are just reduced to meet a DA application.
Yeah.
And the moment that gets approved, who's going to police the numbers?
All right.
You're not going to have a... Yeah,
well, when we walked Lily Street and Waratah Street and Violet Street, we noticed that the carriageways are wider.
Mm-hmm.
So you've actually do have two travelling lanes.
Yep.
With car parking.
Yep.
Both sides of the
yep.
street.
I can even show examples of cars stopping in the middle of Daisy Street and having traffic controllers, but they're not really directing traffic, standing there and watching two cars pull up side by side. I'm not sure if you're aware of where the driveway of the church is.
Yeah, we were there today.
Yeah, so you have two cars that stop side by side
mm-hmm.
and keep elongating out of the car.
Mm-hmm.
And then the traffic controllers just there watching them. I've got footage of mm-hmm. that if that is required later down the line.
Yeah.
But that's a weekly.
So that's, even though the traffic is being now diverted from Daisy Street,
yeah.
to some extent you're still getting that problem, aren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, so because they're not allowing them to stop in the street,
mm-hmm.
park in the street. They're stopping in the middle of Daisy Street and they're elongating out of...
Okay.
On the main road.
And then they move on.
And then you see cars coming from either direction stopping
mm-hmm.
for them to pass so they can get through. And that's if that's going to happen on a Wednesday and a Sunday, what's going to happen for 5 or 6 days a week?
Yeah.
It's okay. Only going to get worse.
All right. It leads to another question. With the activities that there are there now. We had some objections that were talking about the extra activity in the area with the numbers of people coming and going. Does that cause either noise problems or...
The more noise problems now at the moment, and it's only it's been happening when there's the choir. 9:30 up to about 9:15, I could still hear it from my bedroom, and I'm parallel to the church.
Mm-hmm.
I've got footage of that also, if you require that, with time stamped with the times. Apparently, this week they're meant to finish at 8 p.m. and have a buffer zone of half an hour, but it seems to exceed past 8:30 and go on to 9:15, 9:20. I mean, if those little things start adding up, I mean, you're just going to have, I'll probably just have Bell Council stationed outside Daisy Street for 24 hours if it goes to 7 days.
If I'm right on the map they've given us, you're opposite the church.
Directly opposite.
Yeah, okay.
So we can hear as well as Mr. Williams, which is on the right hand side of the church.
Mm-hmm.
You can hear the choir from our lounge rooms and bedrooms, and that's just the Sunday and the Wednesday. I mean, fair enough, it's a worship service, fair enough. But if they exceed past the times that they should, and then if that's going to be three extra services or two extra services, it's just going to...
Do you get another question I've got is, do you get an issue of people being there for one service and then they're, say, talking to each other on site while the people for the next service arrive?
9:30 So last night they had an event. They had a service. 9:30 at night, the cars... So there's only two allocated car spots. There was up to five cars in there last night. And my bedroom is parallel to their driveway. So I can hear people talking loud at night. And as they're driving out of that driveway, which isn't a car park, which isn't even an approved car park, it's only two car spots, one by one, the headlights are just shining into our bedroom. I'm up at 4 a.m. every morning. I work in construction. So every bit of sleep is vital for me. So Wednesday night, I can let that be. Sundays, I mean, you have two services. They can start from 8 a.m. People start turning up. And they stay parked in Lily Street up to about 6 p.m., 7 p.m., 8 p.m. It's the same cars. And sometimes I do hot potato where they'll move that car from that street and then they'll move it down further to Lily Street or Daisy Street if they can. And then sometimes I'll go to Violet. So it's just the same kind of cars there for a long duration.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Boutros.
No worries.
And no other questions from the panel? All right. Thank you. Now, if we can go on.
Sorry, Mr. Chair.
I'm sorry. The lady who was sitting next to Donata Christofulli, what was your issue? Did you say you'd asked the council to allow you to speak? All right, and your name isn't in the list I've got here. What does the panel think? Should we hear from the lady or not? Okay, you'll need to come forward to the microphone, please, and give your name and your address, please.
My name is Yvonne Lott, so a couple of blocks down from Felicity. We've got both issues because on my right, there's a church there as well. And on the weekends, we never get a parking spot in front of our house. If you go anywhere, it's always been taken, and they will stay there till, you know, sometimes past 6 o'clock.
Can I just ask, when we did the walk around, when we were in Waratah Street, I think, it was Violet Street. We looked down to the east, I suppose it was, and we could see another church down there.
So I'm just like probably 50 metres from that church, and we're probably about less than 100 metres from the other church.
Yeah.
And they are parking in front of our place as well. Mm. And I have young kids. And sometimes, like, after school activities, I don't even get a spot in front of my house. I have to drop them, you know, and then go and find a spot somewhere else, whether it, you know, raining or whatever, we still have to do that. And, you know, apart from a safety issue, it's even my in-laws, they're quite old. When they come, one of them need to drop the other one and then go and find a spot somewhere else to park.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been happening. I mean, like, it's just getting worse and worse. We've been there for 15 years now, but it's just that the last, maybe I would say 3 to 5 years has actually increased quite a lot. And mm-hmm. yeah, it's just.
Okay.
So I definitely opposed to that. I mean, having 7 days, that's.
Mm. Okay.
Then we can.
Thank you. I'll see if any panel members have questions. No. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
The things you've said, I think we've read in some of the written objections. Similar things have been mentioned. So we are aware of it. Now, we'll go now to, I think, Boris Santana. Mr. Santana, are you there? Oh, good. Thank you. If you'd come forward. Now, you've heard the concerns of the residents. Perhaps you'd like to speak to them and anything else you have on your mind.
Sure. I was hoping instead to provide some critical background information that I think would be pertinent
All right.
for the panel's consideration.
And just tilt the microphone up to your mouth.
Sorry.
Thank you.
And particularly why I request that is just because we've prepared a comprehensive written submission to the panel, which was uploaded when we had registered. I'm not entirely sure if that's been provided to the panel for their consideration, but if not, we've also printed hard copies that we could submit.
What was that again?
So it's a written submission that we've prepared in support of the proposal. And
well, I think we've got fairly comprehensive information here because we've been doing a lot of reading. Mr. Reid, did you have that submission? Ask the applicant a question, if you would.
So was this a recent submission?
Yeah, so when we're required to register to attend or to present to the panel, we are able to upload a written submission for the panel's consideration,
okay.
whether it's prior to, during or after the panel convening. And yeah, so I've uploaded a written submission. So it just obviously deals with some of the reasons for refusal in the planner's assessment report, but also just supports our desire for the panel to accept a recommendation for approval. So yeah, we've uploaded that. I'm just not quite sure whether it's been provided.
Okay, I'll have to confirm that. Sorry, I don't know that it's been provided to the panel.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just have to check that with the secretariat.
All right, we'll continue on.
Sure. So as I said, my role this evening will just be to present the pertinent background information. I am presenting alongside Aaron Delapaz, who is the in-council on behalf of Iglesia Ni Cristo, who is a religious organisation that own and operate the church at the premises. So we are hoping that the panel reviews, that intends to review that written submission. So this evening, I will just highlight, like Aaron and I will just highlight the critical aspects of that submission. But I think Aaron will also be in a better position to respond to some of the concerns that were raised this evening by the residents. Surrounding residents. And if the panel will permit myself and Aaron just to have a bit more time to present, just because of the volume of matters that we wish to present, but also because this is the first submitting this written submission is the first opportunity that the church has had to actually submit anything since the application was lodged.
Well, so, just tell me, how long do you think you need? I'll have to ask the panel if they...
Oh, I completely understand. I think it'll be probably 5 minutes for myself, okay. And Aaron will probably be the same, 5 or 6 minutes. Well, so it's not much.
You're okay with 5 minutes?
Yeah.
Yes, they're okay with 5 minutes.
Sure.
Okay, I'll start it now.
Thank you very much. I might just start with the previous application. So Eurasia Near Christo has owned and operated the site as a place of worship since 2012, as has been mentioned by one of the residents. Since that time, there was a Class 4 appeal that was initiated by the council on behalf of the residents in 2019, as has been touched on, because of concerns with their operation. And that Class 4 was to clarify the extent of existing use rights for a place of worship. It was followed by a deemed refusal of a development application which sought to expand the existing use rights as it was defined in the Class 4 appeal. And although there was a deemed refusal, the Lenin Environment Court did grant approval on the 28th of November 2019 for the expanded use of the premises. This is subject to conditions of consent, a plan of management, both of which you have copies of in the agenda, but also forms part of our written.
We've got questions on those things. So we've read that. So get on to your points.
Yes. So the current use of the premises operates in accordance with those conditions, the plan of management. Due to the growing demand for spiritual worship and communal support, the church is now seeking to expand the use again. And so the application before you seeks to modify that. And I won't go into the specifics of what the church is intending to modify, because Chris has already touched on that. But what I would clarify is that the church is not seeking 5 worship services, each generating 140 persons at any one time. It's 4 services. So one of those services is a children's worship service, which only generates 50 persons at any one time. So that's the only thing that I would clarify. And just to talk to the current application, during the assessment of the application, we did submit a GIPA request for any complaints that had been received since the court issued consent that have been received by the council. And the findings of the GIPA revealed that there were 4 complaints since 2019, 3 of which were made within 1 month of the court issued consent. My client also has a complaints handling procedure within the plan of management. They've acknowledged that they haven't received any complaints in that time, but we find ourselves in a situation where we've received numerous public submissions that are claiming that during that time, they have been operating with adverse impacts and also operating in contravention of the conditions of consent and plan of management. So, in addition to that, council's has also made internal referrals to several branches, none of which have a recommended refusal of the application, even though certain grounds that refusal is based on overlap with their respective fields of expertise. That takes me on to, this will be my final point. Our review of the planner's assessment has revealed 3 primary matters underpinning their recommendation. Firstly, that the council accepts the claim that the premises is not operated in accordance with the consent and the plan of management. Secondly, it accepts the claim that the premises has resulted in unacceptable impacts relating to traffic, parking and acoustics. And lastly, given the inability of the existing operation to operate satisfactorily in both those respects, the proposal is not accessible because it will exacerbate those existing issues to the detriment of the surrounding residents. So We respectfully disagree with that recommendation on several grounds. Firstly, we challenge the general validity and the spirit of the claims made in the public submissions. We also contend that the council has placed undue weight on the submissions, overlooking other critical factors that should inform its assessment. And in evaluating the proposal, we believe that council has not adequately considered the...
What happened then?
Is that my cue? Is that like, is this the Oscars? Right.
Well,
I'm almost done. I have two sentences. Yeah. So, lastly, in evaluating the proposal, that we do believe that the council hasn't adequately considered the findings of the technical experts, but also the principles and observations which were established in the previous court issued consent for the premises. So, I will probably now hand over to Aaron.
Well, right, and Siri, if you've got any questions.
Sure. Yeah, sure, no problem.
Thank you for that presentation. I'm interested, you already have quite an sort of in your plan of management from the court rules-based over numbers, prescriptive sort of, how do you monitor those and how are they policed?
Sure. Because I'm the town planning consultant, and I should have probably made this clearer at the start of my address, I am probably not best placed to answer those questions because it has to do with the operation. So I think that would be best. Aaron would be best placed speaking on behalf of the church and its operations. So anything maybe town planning
related. Okay, so as a follow-on, you're an experienced town planner. Is this plan of management, in your opinion, a robust document that is fit for purpose to balance the needs of the church and the community in its current form?
I think that there are probably minor adjustments that could be made, but I think in essence, the plan of management does sort of satisfy the criteria that's expected of a plan of management. Otherwise, the court in its previous ruling would not have accepted that plan of management. I do understand that what's different from in the current circumstances is that the church has now operated with a plan of management as opposed to have operated without a plan and management. So the circumstances are different, I understand that. And that's why I say that there may be some adjustments to improve the situation. But in essence, I think it is satisfactory.
And so just to follow on, you're not proposing any modifications to the plan of management. You're just proposing to bring it up to date for your new proposal.
We are happy. We are open, and I don't want to speak. Okay. So the church is happy to modify the plan of management. What we would request is that relevant, and I suppose this forum has been of benefit, I suppose, to everyone that's attended, including the church, because they get to hear what the residents have to say. So I do think that they are open to working with the relevant stakeholders, council included, to amend the plan of management.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you for that. I understand you're probably not on the ground the right person to answer. I've got other questions, but I'll wait to hear from the
other speaker. Not a problem.
From a town planning perspective, the proposals seeking to add additional services, the hours of those services, say, for example, choir practice, overlap with proposed or current service times, as in worship times. How does that work? How does that reconcile? So you've got choir practice happening when you've got a church service happening? Or is that not going to happen? Or is that an operational thing we need to...
I think that's an operational thing, yeah.
Okay, I think most of my questions are probably operational matters then.
Yeah, I suppose the only response I would have to that, if it hasn't been dealt with adequately by the technical experts, then I suppose that they could always revise their their findings to make it more relevant.
Okay.
Oh, to address your point.
So I'll ask a follow-up question if I could. So the development, the modification application has been supported by letter reports from traffic and acoustic experts retained by the church.
Correct.
Did either of those experts do any follow-up baseline surveys in terms of background noise or traffic generation on service days or evenings when activities were happening?
No, so they relied on the baseline information from 2019, both the acoustic and the traffic consultant. And I suppose they felt comfortable in doing so because our client was not proposing an expansion of the capacity of the services at any one time. So there are, I suppose, assumptions that those consultants have made. We are aware that councils, environmental health branch, who do consider acoustic issues, did not request updated baseline information and were satisfied with that approach. Having said that, Council's traffic branch did request not so much updated baseline information for the existing service days to verify that the situation hasn't changed, but it's more so requesting information, data for the days where there will be additional adult worship services. So those are only the services that generate 140 people at any one time. They didn't request any information on those days where the church proposes Bible study sessions, which I presume is because those sessions only generate 20 people. That's again an assumption, but I would probably say it's a valid one, seeing as I haven't requested that information. Yeah.
And one last question, if I could. You made the statements in your presentation to us that the church is operating in accordance with the conditions of consent and the plan of management. Do you have data to demonstrate that?
I think that might be, something. I suppose the only data that I would base that assertion on is the results of the GIPA.
The lack of complaints.
The lack of complaints, which I think is relevant considering that what had prompted council to do the class four was because of complaints. So it's, I don't think it's the residents are within their right to complain to council during the operation, or even to complain to the church, because as I mentioned, there's a complaints handling procedure. But we just, there's nothing there. So I think that's when I did mention that there were relevant considerations, those are the considerations.
Okay. Thank you.
Just one question I had was, these week-long activities, for instance, the Holy Supper devotional prayer, in March and April for a period of 1 week each, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Church anniversary Thanksgiving for 2 weeks from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Monday to Saturday, and year-end Thanksgiving again for 2 weeks, Monday to Saturday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. and 50 people. Is that the same 50 people for 12 hours? Or is it, will that 50 people rotate during the day so you'll get, if people only stay 1 hour, you could have 400 people come through most of the day.
Yeah, that is a valid question. My understanding is that the 50 persons at any one time. That restriction is 50 persons at any one time, but that doesn't stop.
Okay, so they could rotate.
Yeah.
And the traffic study hasn't taken account of that.
Yes, I would add that the traffic study hasn't taken that into consideration during the court-issued approval either.
All right.
So we're not changing that rotation. And correct me if I'm wrong, Aaron.
We're considering the current proposal. So
yes,
you might say it's not different to when the court dealt with it, but we might take a different view.
And I think we are open to considering potential day-long capacities that address your point, just to ensure that there's not an overwhelming number of people, even though there won't be more than 50 at any one time. There's the overall capacity throughout the days.
Okay, so we can take that up with Mr. De La Paz. Tom, have you got any questions?
No.
All right. Unless we've got anything else to add, I think we might have heard enough at this stage. Sure. Thank you, Mr. Santana.
Thank you.
Next on the list, I have Aaron De La Paz. Mr. De La Paz, I think when we're on site, you were introduced as counsel.
Yes, in-house for the church.
Oh, in-house. Thank you. But you're a lawyer.
I am.
Thank you.
If I can invite the chair and the panel, would it be better if we address the questions that you might have first before I proceed with the presentation, considering that I think...
No, I think...
All right.
Well, unless you're going to curtail what you're going to say.
Right.
Well, I mean, we could ask questions that we already have. We've obviously got a few passed over from Mr. Santana. Is the panel happy to deal with those questions?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. Well, deal with mine first, if you like. I can remember that far back.
Sure.
So 50 people limited, but over 12-hour days for periods of 1 week and 2 weeks at a time. And if I find it hard to believe people would stay all day, 12 hours.
Yes.
And so it's not going to be 50 people on the site over the day.
Right.
It could be a lot more than that.
Right. If I can then provide some background, perhaps, concerning the three special events that you've mentioned, the year-end Thanksgiving on December, the mid-year Thanksgiving in July, and the Holy Supper on between March and April. The church, as a matter of background, the congregation in Croydon Park only has at most 140 people. That's including the members who do not regularly attend. So we keep a fairly close track with our record of membership. For reference, the nearest congregation to Croydon Park is in Arncliffe in the area of Eastern Sydney. And so our congregants who live in Eastern Sydney, they're unlikely to travel over to Croydon Park, for example, to attend their services. So when it comes to the ceiling, for the lack of a better word, perhaps, of the people that can attend those services, at most at the moment, we have 140 people. Among those 140 people, and this is relevant to one of the requests that we are making considering the adjustment of the ingress times for choir members, deacons, and deaconesses. The ones that we refer to as choir members, deacons, and deaconesses, they compose the 50, Mr. Chair, perhaps, that you're referring to when it comes to those two-week-long devotional prayers. I should say as well that when that was called to our attention in regards to what we actually do within those 2 weeks, those are devotional prayers that only last for about 15 minutes. And so we have one in the morning, beginning at around 9 in the morning, and at night, beginning at around 7 in the evening. And so when it comes to actual practice of what we do, even if the plan of management says that we are able to use it for 12 hours, I think the plan of management says, around 50 people attending. In practice, it is only the 50 officers, those who have roles to perform in the church that participate in those devotional prayers, and they leave right after because they do have work to go to. And also afterwards, some of them, the ones that attend at night, they would go straight from work and then go back home immediately.
Okay, that's all I need to hear. Questions from the panel?
Yes, we'll go back to my question about how you monitor and enforce the numbers, because you do have quite prescriptive arrangements.
Yes.
So you've heard from some submitters who've indicated that you're not complying. And can you just respond to what you have in place if to make sure your caps are met and that people do not visit the premises after the approved hours?
Absolutely. And I think it's a valid question. I should say as well that since the plan of management came into effect, as shown by what Mr. Santana noted, that over the period of 5 years, there have only been 5 complaints that were made. In relation to that, and I do apologize, I will go back to answering the question. But to the point of the complaints that have been made, I should say that with those complaints, we were never informed about them by council. We were never asked to respond to those allegations. And I think as Mr. Santana noted, none of them ended up in enforcement action that deemed the church violated the terms of the plan of management. As to the question of the panel member, when it comes to how we police ourselves, pretty much, when it comes to the attendance of our members, again, we only have a maximum of 140 adult members that can attend at once. Our normal rate of non-attendance for every worship service is around 10 to 15%. In our congregation, and I do invite you, if you do have the opportunity to come inside the place of worship, we have an attendance board. Every member gets an attendance chip that they turn over when they attend. And so we know exactly how many people are in the premises at any given worship service simply by counting the attendance chips. That is not just in the congregation of Croydon Park, but that is a practice that the church does in every local congregation. So at any one point, we are aware of how many people are inside the building. And part of that as well is the health and safety risks that we were alerted to before the plan of management was put in place.
Sorry, just one follow-on question. So with these 12-hour windows for what you describe in your plan of management as major church occasions, I'm just going to pick one of them, the church anniversary Thanksgiving service, would not you, and you have a cap of 50 people or you're proposing, can you explain to me why, if these are special and major events, you don't have the 140 less the 10% you've just referred to? Why wouldn't they attract the maximum crowd?
Right. I should say that those devotional prayers are meant to prepare for the actual worship services at the end of that week. So on December at a certain day, on July at a certain day, and on March at a certain day, currently on a Sunday, because we're only allowed one weekend service, we hold what's called our Thanksgiving worship service. That's the worship service that attracts peak attendance of up to 140 people. Now, in preparation of that, the officers, those who are deacons, deaconesses, choir members, those who have roles to play when it comes to those special occasions, they take some time out of their day to prepare themselves, having special roles to perform on the day of those worship services. And they do that by coming into the chapel, those 50 officers, praying together and then leaving right after. And so that's the reason, and it is a valid question when it comes to the background of our operations. The devotional prayer, the Monday to Saturday that precedes the actual service on the Sunday, is meant to be a short prayer preparation for the officers who have particular roles that they will be fulfilling on the day of those special events.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm a little confused.
No, by all means, sure.
So I understand that the church leaders, for want of a better word, being the 50 attendees at these special events, so it's not normal congregation members that come to the Holy Supper devotional prayer, for example. It's just the church leaders, for want of a better word.
If I can, sorry for interrupting you, if I can put it perhaps in a in a more simplistic way, we are, if need be, prepared to limit that time to an hour in the morning and an hour at night. We don't really need 12 hours for those prayers. The plan of management that was originally approved by the LEC contained that provision, but in practice, there's not really that many people that stay for 12 hours because all of our congregants also go to work. And so the officers, the 50 or so people that will be preparing themselves for those special occasions, they only need about 30 minutes in the morning and then maybe perhaps 30 minutes at night. I should say those who attend the prayers in the morning aren't the same people that attend at night. We only make those two arrangements so that we can accommodate for members.
So why did you ask for 12 hours?
Sure. It is a valid question as well. And I think it might be...
So what's the answer?
Well, really, in practice, it might have been because of what was done before, which I don't really have that information. But
Okay. Thank you. Sure. Any other questions? No?
So I'm just trying to get a feel for a typical Sunday morning. So we have the 9:30 to 11 o'clock adult service, and then immediately following the 11:30 to 12:30 children's service, which is the adults 140 people and the children is 50 people. Is that 50 children or is that 50 children including the parents?
It's 50. We don't have 50 children in the church that attend the children's worship service.
Okay.
So what's envisioned by the 50 attendees are about, give or take, 15 children, as well as the people who facilitate the children's worship service, so including the what we would call the Sunday school teacher, perhaps, might be the best closest term, as well as the officers of the children's worship service that maintain the orderliness of the gathering. So when it comes to the activities that we have on Sunday, again, we begin with the worship service in the morning for 1.5 hours. We don't usually last that long anyway. We wrap up. We prepare for the children's worship service afterwards. The parents who do not have children, usually they would leave. Also, we do not have those with children with prior appointments, even though they're supposed to be attending anyway. Sometimes they do leave as well. But we do have those children's services every Sunday.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Yep, it's one I posed to Mr. Santana earlier. So the modification application is proposing a Saturday worship session between 7 and 9 p.m., but your current approval enables you to do choir practice between 5 and 8 p.m. How does that work?
Yes. So if the modification application is granted, and as we are planning how to move forward with our operations, we did agree that the existing choir practice will no longer be observed. It will be absorbed into, absorbed isn't the right word. The service that would be conducted is the worship service that attracts 140 people on that day. And if need be, like what Mr. Santana said, if there needs to be any changes to the plan of management to better clarify the nature of these events, as well as to account for the concerns of the chair concerning the length of time of those special events, then we're more than willing to have that conversation as well. And which will also benefit us because it will provide a lot more clarity on our end when it comes to our compliance.
Would you need another choir practice session because you'd be losing a choir practice session? So would you need another one on another evening to prepare for your major service days?
At this point, I'm not sure if I can answer that definitively. But what I can say is if there are events, because at the moment we are constrained by the plan of management, when it comes to how we use the chapel, we do make alternate arrangements instead. So what we do, for example, is we rent a hall, for example, wherein we can use it for a couple of hours to do the activities that are not in the plan of management. For example, when we conducted a visa counseling seminar for international students. Many of our members are international students as well as their friends. The plan of management does not make way for activities like that. And so what we instead do is we hire a hall, a temporary place, wherein we conduct those activities until such time that maybe not now, but in the future, we are allowed to conduct those within our premises.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
just one more question. Just having heard from the residents, has the church ever had any appetite for speaking to residents or reaching out to residents in a structured way or attempted to help everybody understand what's going on?
Absolutely. Well, we at first, what we did was, in accordance as well to the conditions that were imposed by the LEC, we made the plan of management available. There's a copy of the plan of management, and I'm not sure if you saw it during your site visit, but there's a copy that hangs by the gate of the church that's laminated, which makes it plainly clear what we're allowed and not allowed to do, as well as what Mr. Santana mentioned, which is the complaints mechanism. The contact details of our head deacons were also present tonight, that they can give us a ring and say, look, you know, someone parked on my driveway. Is it your members? Look, someone's, you know, dropping off people where they shouldn't be. Are those your members? And so that's one of the ways by which we sought to work with the community. We have also invited them to our events. We did have some success in some neighbors going to what we call our Neighborhood Appreciation Day. So what we would usually do is we would provide food for them, catering. We would invite them to have a tour of the inside of the chapel so that they can have a look and see. And there are some residents who did take us up on our invitation. And the feedback we got was very positive because many of them have lived in the area for quite some time already. And they appreciated to see how the church inside was beautified. I think they would have seen it before when it was being used by other churches. And I think some of them were glad to see that we've sort of renovated the inside and the outside. There are, I guess, unfortunate circumstances when we cannot perhaps get the agreement from all of the residents. But we have been consistently, even before the plan of management was in place, trying to reach out and to see what their concerns are concerning our operation and sort of become better Christians as well, to become better Thanks. Neighbors.
Thank you. You've answered that.
Well, thank you. Are there any more questions?
Just one last one.
Yeah, go ahead.
You heard some of the issues raised by the residents earlier tonight about the ushers, if for want of a better word, traffic ushers being ineffective by allowing people to pull up in the street and unload people and an active program of deflecting people parking into adjoining streets. Do you have a response to those two concerns that were raised?
Of course. And I was going to deal with them in the part of my submissions. But to answer the panel members' questions concerning the diversions, we did tell the brethren to make some effort if they have to walk far, and you saw that it was an uphill walk as well, that it would be better for them to park elsewhere because we made the same observations as the learned chair made, which is that parking along Daisy Street, if it's parked on both sides, only makes up, practically becomes a one-way street. And so we did tell the members that if you park along streets that are wider, then it might be easier for you as well to park and then to get out of that parking spot after the worship service. So when it comes to issues of diversion, we did tell the members, even if you have to walk 20 minutes to the church, it might still be easier rather than parking along Daisy, where the streets are fairly narrow. We sought to do that because, well, firstly, it would benefit our members as well. But we also acknowledge the sort of the way that the allotments have been drawn out along Daisy Street. When it comes to the issues of drop-offs, perhaps the only thing that I can add to what has already been mentioned is that the learned commissioner in the LEC judgment also noted the issue of drop-offs. And they did say something along the lines of, and again, I don't have it in front of me, but I can point out and kindly submit the relevant judgments if given the opportunity afterwards, where the learned commissioner made observation, something along the lines of, if the issues of drop-offs are really impacting the amenity of the neighborhood, then perhaps council can designate certain areas in front of the chapel as drop-off spots. And we were very much happy to do that as well, to make sure that the parking spaces in front are designated as drop-off spots. But again, as Mr. Santana noted, much of what we can do moving forward, since we're bound by the plan of management already, involves the help of council as well, because designating those areas to ameliorate the perceived effect of our operations, involve decision-making that is far beyond something that we can deal with on a modification application.
Now, well, that's all our questions, but have you covered most of the things you wanted to say?
Yes. If I can make just some final points, I have the chair and the panel permits it.
Not longer than 3 minutes, however.
No, by all means. I don't want to belabor and, I guess, repeat the points in detail that I've mentioned before, because we deal with them in detail on the written submissions that Mr. Santana mentioned that was uploaded to the system. So what I would like to invite the panel to do is, if you can pay close attention to the submissions that we've given, because what we do in those submissions is not just address the concerns that have already been made, but to provide relevant observations of the LEC concerning the similar issues that have been observed in 2019. So for example, when the learned chair asked the question earlier concerning the availability of on-street parking, the commissioner in their judgment made reference on that, if I'm not mistaken, on paragraph 54, making an observation that with 140 people attending the worship service, that there's still plenty of on-site or on-street parking available for both the attendees and the residents. That's also further supported, not just by the traffic report commissioned in 2019, but even the one that we commissioned in support of the current application. I would also want to stress that what Mr. Santana mentioned, when it comes to intensification application like this, if I'm not mistaken, council takes very significant weight, put significant weight perhaps, on our current operations. It's very hard on our part to prove a negative, that we are doing what we can all the time, all the days. But what we can point to is the result of the GIPA requests, which are that out of the 5 complaints that have been made, none of them were actioned by council. And none of them resulted in any enforcement actions. We weren't even informed by those.
Yeah, we've heard that.
Yes.
Before, a couple of times.
Yes. And if I can just...
We do listen.
Thank you. And I really appreciate it. If I can then make just one last point concerning the issue of frequency. I think the way that it's being described as being from 3 nights a week to 5 nights a week is a bit misleading. I say that because it makes it seem as if these worship services are being conducted all day and all night. In fact, the plan of management itself, the windows that demand peak demand for traffic and parking are only for 1.5 hours for those worship services. That accumulates to less than 10 hours a week of peak demand of traffic for 140 attendees. Most of the activities that we have, even if they're spread on different days other than the worship service, I think the chair and the panel might note that those are only attracting at a maximum 50 attendees. So I just wanted to make that point to the panel as well when considering the issue of frequency and constancy. Though when it's described as being 3 nights a week to 5 nights a week, it more accurately should be understood on the small activity window where that peak demand is actually happening.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you, Mr. De La Paz.
Thank you.
Now, I don't think we have any more speakers. For I think we've had a very comprehensive coverage of the residents' concerns and the applicants' responses. So that being the case, with the approval of the panel, we can adjourn the matter to our private session to make a determination on the matter. And thank you all for your attendance at this public section of the planning panel meeting tonight. I'll therefore adjourn to our private session. We'll take a few minutes break while you clear the hall, because we stay in here, okay? Because that's where all the recording equipment is. So thank you very much.